back to Hitch Rad. We just had a splendid week four, if I do say so myself. This is Alex, and on the pod this week we have Cade. How's it going, man?
Hey, Alex, how are you doing?
So, this was a pretty fun week, I'd say, you know? Lots of good games all around, and maybe now we have a new starter in this league in Kenny Pickett.
Ooh.
Am I right?
Yeah.
So exciting.
Honestly, Kenny Pickett threw like the best three picks I've ever seen, if that makes sense. Like, he had three picks in the game, but if I saw him throw those three picks and I was a Steelers fan, I'd be leaving thinking, you know what? Two of them weren't really his fault, and one was like a Hail Mary. Like, I have no problem with that. He had two rushing touchdowns. He's definitely better than Mitch Trubisky. I'd be pretty happy with how things went with the new starter.
For sure, for sure. I mean, the craziest stat, though, is probably that Bailey Zappi threw a touchdown in the NFL before Kenny Pickett did.
That is crazy. Bailey Zappi, what a story. Good for him. He got the call to duty. The Patriots put him in a position to succeed, and they lost. But again, if I'm a Patriots fan, I'm saying we competed, we went out there, we did our thing, and we came as close as we could.
I mean, yeah, it's very impressive given what they were working with at Lambeau.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How about we dig into the games, though?
Wait, before we dig into the games, Alex, I have to offer a public apology. The last time I was on this podcast, I said that the Seattle Seahawks would be one of, if not the worst teams in the NFL, because they would have one of, if not the worst offense in the NFL, because I didn't believe in Geno Smith. I wrote off Geno Smith. Luckily, he didn't write back, and I just wanted to say I'm sorry to the Seattle Seahawks, to Geno Smith, and to all the Seahawks fans out there for being a hater, a doubter, and a non-believer. I've learned the error of my ways.
Yeah, this is a really interesting story. How does Geno Smith, you know, with his career the way it went, suddenly he has the highest completion percentage through the first four games of an NFL season in history?
I think that it's a combination of two things. One, there's this dichotomy between, like, QBs get vastly better over the course of their careers. Between age, call it 22 to 24, and age 30, they improve so much that they're basically different players, a lot of them, unless they come in unbelievably good already. And so Geno has just, you know, been watching film, working on the fundamentals, and he's come out and he's ironed out a lot of the flaws in his game. I think that's step one. Step two is, if you look at the receiving corps he had in New York, both Jets and the Giants, he didn't really have any weapons ever. He was on some teams that were bad for reasons that had nothing to do with him. So I'm sure that the culture in Seattle helps, and having absolute weapons like DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett helps as well.
I think the other thing that probably helps is, at the end of the day, he has one of the lowest yards per attempt in the league. He is throwing very short passes, so they're more accurate than those deep shots. But if it works, it works. They're 2-2.
2-2, can't complain, and they're frisky. And they got their revenge win.
That they did. But yeah, let's go into the schedule now. We'll still talk more about them Seahawks. Thursday Night Football was a really interesting one, though.
That was a close, like, well-fought game until Tua went down. Then sort of the writing was on the wall, I think.
Yeah. I will say that Teddy played pretty admirably in his stead, but you can't do everything. I mean, he's not the guy. He's a backup for a reason. He's a good backup, but he's a backup. And Tua, for what his career has been, obviously it started off quite poor given the expectations. He looked really good for the first three games in Miami.
Teddy is not that guy. He did the best he could. You know, coming in relief is hard. If you have a whole week knowing you're the starter and you're prepping to go in, that's a whole different story than you drew up a game plan assuming you have one guy and then suddenly he's not there anymore. They were basically knotted up at halftime, and then the second half was a mostly Bengals affair. They had, you know, some big miscues, but for the most part, I think the Bengals are starting to put it together. They're starting back to claw out of the hole they started in. But Zach Taylor needs to be fired into the sun. He needs to be left on the tarmac. No handshake goodbye, no pat on the butt. He's just got to get – they got to get him out of there. He's a disaster.
Yeah, you still think so?
Oh, I have thought so, think so, and will continue to think so. And if Zach Taylor going to a Super Bowl did not change my mind, I don't see much else doing the job.
I mean, that's fair. But that's why I asked still, you know. I was reading an interesting article about how basically defenses know almost instantly whether they're running a pass or a run play because mm-hmm. of the way that they spread out their personnel on pass plays versus how close together they are during a rush play.
That's part of it. And also Joe Mixon, I was looking at an article, has a tell where I believe if he's standing up, it's going to be a pass play. And if he is leaning over, it's going to be a run play, like to like 98% certainty.
Interesting. Well, it's weird that it took this long for the tell to figure out because Mixon looked amazing last year.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he's always had the tell. Maybe it's a new thing. But that just seems like someone, one of your own film coaches, should be able to point out and fix before the internet figures it out.
It really does, which all points to fire Zach Taylor into the sun.
Fire Zach Taylor into the sun. Yes, sir.
Yeah. I will say, I mean, Miami fought. They did. It's and the feeling that I think was maybe like the most interesting play was that obviously that Tyreek bobble that led into a catch.
Yeah.
When ultimately Teddy, who has never been known for having an arm in his career, hit the deep shot that Tua couldn't hit earlier in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Different play, of course, but I remember he vastly underthrew Tyreek. That maybe it was Waddle. Either way, it was a. Tua and arm strength don't really go hand in hand.
I think Tua does have the arm strength. He's still just sort of figuring it out. Teddy has been a check down artist basically his whole career. Teddy two gloves, check down commander, heir to the Alex Smith throne. But I mean, that's probably the best deep ball I've seen him throw off the top of my head. I know he has a couple others in there, but I mean, good for Teddy. It still didn't end up working out, but hopefully they can bounce back week five.
Yeah, now that he's the known starter, it mm-hmm. should be better. But yeah, Vikings at Saints. I don't know about you, but I personally am not a fan of the entire London game series because it's like, I'm not going to watch football at 9 in the morning, you know?
I have never, ever seen the first half of a London game ever, and I never plan on it. It was a fun game, though. I don't like the London games either. It is what it is. The NFL is going to keep doing them, and if they had their way, they'd keep adding more. But
I mean, I think at some point they're going to try and move the Jags to London, honestly, considering Imran Khan has a lot of operations there.
If they move the Jags, I believe the people of the city of Jacksonville will drive to wherever Roger Goodell's office is and try and burn it to the ground. I don't know if they'll succeed, but they will try.
Yeah. Good thing Roger Goodell gets a lot of money so he can pay for plenty of fire retardant. That being said, I didn't think this game was really that fun. I guess it was impressed with what Andy Dalton did. Given the limitations of the offense without Kamara and without Michael Thomas. Really leaned heavily on those tight ends there. And then Chris Olave had a few big plays. But mostly I'm just thinking about like disappointment for like what the Vikings should be on offense. They had 5 field goals in this game. Like, what is that? The Vikings got to the red zone like 4 times and had to kick field goals. It's very disappointing if I do say so myself.
Any game with Vikings bungling anything to me is fun. Watching Jay Jetta run roughshod over a secondary is fun. Chris Olave, a rookie, big plays. And we got big nuts Will Lutz hitting a 60-yarder and just missing the 61-yarder. It was just missed it. And then the cheesy announcer line. I forget who was announcing the game, but the cheesy announcer line. Oh, they love kicking here in London. It's like, shut up, man. But yeah, so I was having a good time.
I mean, that's fair. It was fun, I suppose, from that standpoint. I had less fun because I was banking on the Vikings to win for Survivor. So every time the Saints kept coming back, it's like, how is this happening? How is this happening with an Andy Dalton-led offense?
The Red Rifle and Big Nuts Will Lutz is a very difficult combo to overcome, especially in London.
Big Nuts Will Lutz really hit a 60-yarder and was as close as you can be to hitting a 61-yarder.
I was telling the people I was watching the game with, I said, hey, the field goal line is like 1 yard ahead. They said, what's 1 yard really matter? They said, I'm sorry, you are right. When he really, if it was 1 yard shorter, that kick is in. So 1 yard can make all the difference.
Yeah, really can. But I'm certainly happy that kick didn't go in, both for Survivor purposes and for the fact that Cody Parkey is now not the only offender of the double doink in this NFL.
There was another double doink between the Cody Parkey one and this one, but I can't remember off the top of my head who it was. And it wasn't the Cody Parkey one was egregious to the extent it'll never be beaten. The other double doink was similar, where I think it went off right crossbar, bottom, popped out. Yeah. But I can't remember who it was. I'd have to do some research.
Nothing's going to beat Parkey. And, you know, that's obviously my last real memory. I mean, the Bears made the playoffs like 2 years later when, again, we shouldn't. We should have been tanking. But that play will be forever etched into my memory. And it doesn't matter if some defensive player slightly touched it. You know, we should have moved forward.
Mm-hmm.
It's... I feel like existential dread cross over my body when I think about that play. But I'm just happy that other kickers have been doing it. So slowly but surely, I will desensitize to this pain.
I will just tell you that it will never go away until you're numb to all external sensation.
Damn. I think it's going to take some time before I'm numb to all physical sensation.
Yeah, but not even physical, just external, from external stimuli.
Fair enough. Moving on though, Browns and Falcons.
Bad game, bad teams. Scordarrelle got hurt. Not really much to say about this one, I don't think.
I don't think so either, but the Browns are just the less bad team, so I'm disappointed in them.
I mean, for them, if they can keep up something to the tune of 500 ball by the time Deshaun Watson gets back, I'm sure they're thrilled. But they really need to win games like this against bad teams.
I'm sure they're thrilled. But, yeah, they could have been 4-0 right now. Yeah. They gave up leads late in games twice in a row now. Well, not twice in a row, but twice in a row to like non-divisional bad teams.
Yeah.
It's something that's got to get worked on. But, yeah. Bills at Ravens. This was, as Rob would put it, a juicy game.
Very juicy game. Honestly, could have been a primetime matchup. It was sloppy. I think it was raining and it was gusting. So second time in 2 years the Bills have had to deal with that. Lamar, as always, looked amazing. The Bills looked like they ate glue for the first 47 minutes of the game before they decided, hey, we can actually win this thing, guys. Wait, let's actually like try.
Yeah, that's pretty much accurate. But it's really weird. I mean, someone who's a fantasy owner of Lamar and someone who saw the offense part at the end of the game, particularly the red zone pick. I didn't think it was a wonderful game out of him. But yeah, this Raven team certainly knows how to give up big leads. They've lost two games now when they were up 17.
They are the champions of the season at snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. And I think I saw a stat that like in their first like 400 games, they were like 460 and one when they were led by like 15 or more. I forget what the exact number was. And this season, they're 2-2 when they lead by that number.
Yeah. Sounds about right. I mean, at least it means this season they're getting big leads. That means they've had three possession leads. I mean, more than two possession leads in every single game this season. But, yeah, clearly this offense has been coming apart late in games, or maybe more. It was really much more of a defensive collapse against the Dolphins. This game, it definitely felt more like an offensive problem with what was at the end. And then, obviously, Harbaugh is probably going to be answering lots of complaints regarding going for it at the 2-yard line instead of just taking a field goal.
I mean, that's one of those decisions where when it works, you look like a genius, and when you don't, the media lambasts you. I didn't mind it from the perspective of if you score a touchdown, you're probably going to win, and if you kick a field goal, it's probably going to OT at the least. So I didn't mind it so much trying to settle it on the field, but it's definitely a bad look when it doesn't work, which is unfortunate since it should be a process over results mindset, but the NFL is a results league.
It's true. It is a results league, but, I mean, the results literally couldn't have been worse unless it was an immediate pick six that play, because of course Lamar had to throw it off his back foot while, like, fading away just to get it to someone. And, of course, it lands into Jordan Poyer's hands for his second interception of the night. Like, it was tough sledding for it to go the way it did, because the plan was at least they're at the 2-yard line if we fail. But no, they get to move all the way up to the 25-yard line.
I think that is an indictment of the play call rather than the decision to go for it. And I said that in real time as well. I think that there could, like, you're one of the most lethal offenses in football with 2 yards to go in any situation. So why is that the play? And why is the one unacceptable outcome short of a pick six, as you said, what ended up occurring?
Yeah, that's fair. I guess it's a question. I mean, was it the play or, I think a lot of it was the offensive line. The O-line was not holding up well against the Bills' pass rush, for sure. So, yeah, Lamar has not had to deal with that much pressure this year. So it came up a really bad – I mean, this is why their offense was really stagnant compared to other games. Yeah. Moving on, though. Commanders at Cowboys.
The Commanders, as we said in our NFC preview, are bad, and they should feel bad. Cooper Rush, greatest quarterback to ever throw the ball.
I mean, you can't dispute it at this point.
He's literally perfect.
Really perfect. If he wins against the Rams next week, oh boy. Oh boy.
Maybe Jerry Jones will get the QB controversy he's been hoping for.
Yeah, just any reason to get rid of Dak's contract.
Is there a more iconic duo in football than Jerry Jones and saying dumbass comments? Maybe Vikings and Bills and like brutally missed kicks? Or... I don't know, like the Chargers and choking in ways that boggle the mind. Or maybe the Bengals and being cheap. I don't know. What do you think?
Maybe for me, I mean, we're all biased based on our personal viewing perspective. For me, it maybe is the Packers and always doing so terribly, but just doing well enough and also getting the favor of the refs so you come out and win every game pretty much.
The Packers and eviscerating the Bears on primetime football. Yep, I agree.
That's exactly what I said. Thanks,
the Bears and having sub 4,000 yard QBs.
I think he's literally on pace for only like 2,000 yards right now.
I think he's on pace for less. He has less completions than Cooper Kupp has catches. He's got like 34 completions on the year.
Yeah. It is very bad. It is very bad. But I'll talk more about my Bears a little bit later.
Bears.
There's not much to say about Commanders at Cowboys. I guess, I mean, I, I, this O-line has been truly awful for Washington, and it needs to hold up if Carson Wentz is going to be successful.
I guess my two comments would be, A, if you watch this whole game, I'm sorry, and you may be entitled to financial compensation. And two, if you are a Commanders fan, why? I'm sorry. Make better life choices.
Fair enough. That said, they do have the same record as your Panthers.
They do have the same record as my Panthers, but my Panthers have made a Super Bowl in the last 7 years, and the Commanders eat glue, and their stadium's falling apart.
And they have one of the worst owners in all of football. And the worst field, yeah.
Yeah.
Really, really tough sledding.
They rank probably like 32nd out of 32 in many major categories that you would – that's not ideal, I would say.
No, it isn't. At least for the Bears, it's pretty much just their passing offense that's 32nd.
Moving on to Lions Seahawks.
What a game.
What a game. Absolutely electric game. The Lions are probably the best team to watch in football right now because they've got a pretty solid offense and they have the worst defense possibly in NFL history. So it's shootout after shootout after shootout. It is all gas, no brakes all the time. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it is definitely an enjoyable experience to view. I'm sure plenty of people who thought the Lions would beat the Seahawks were disappointed from a survivor pool perspective. But at the end of the day, the Seahawks should not be trifled with. Their defense has been better than it was mounted, it was suggested it would be. In fact, maybe it's actually, it's not decent. I can't say that. But any game where you get a pick six is definitely a good game for your defense. It's amazing that they scored as much as they did without DeAndre Swift and without Amon-Ra St. Brown and without DJ Chark. The offense is not the problem. Because with this offensive line, Jared Goff can throw to anyone and Jamal Williams can get as many yards on the ground as he needs. It's exclusively this defense's problem. And Aiden Hutchinson's a really good player that they drafted. But you need a lot more than one star on a defense. You need to fill out the trenches. And I think Dan Campbell has the energy and the kneecap soup to fill up those trenches, but it's just going to take some time.
Ultimately speaking, the defense needs a lot of work. But I think if you're the Lions and you've basically been in rebuild mode the last few years, it's nice to know you have a coach you can depend on who's going to win over the locker room. You've got an offense that can be built upon, and you just got to plug the holes on defense. You just got to go on a spending spree, sort of like the Jags did, and pick up every premier defensive free agent you can and hammer it in the draft. The O-line opens up such great opportunities for the rest of the offense. Maybe you need one other key player, but for the most part, I think defense will be the focus this offseason, and this is a great place to be for the Lions.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely a rebuild I can envy as a Bears fan. Moving on, Chargers at Texans. You did it! The Chargers, they won a game! Isn't that amazing? Chargers beat the Texans, man.
Great stuff. Damian Pierce, 75-yard rushing touchdown. It was an electric run. I was quite pleased to see that. Davis Mills, he's gotten his audition. He's toast, I think. He's got to win enough jobs to save – win enough games to save his job, rather – I just don't think he's got it in him. They'll probably win. I see maybe four wins on the outside, and that'll be tough. The only saving grace being they play in the AFC South, and all those teams blow chunks. But Davis Mills, confirmed not that guy, won't be the starter, I think, moving forward.
Do you think you think they're probably just going to hammer someone in the 2023 draft?
I mean, if they are have a top 3 to 5 pick, I can't see them not taking Bryce Young or CJ Stroud.
Fair enough. I don't know. I guess Davis Mills hasn't – he's not been great. So obviously top of the line QB talent matters, but like, I don't know, the Texans just have a lot of things to figure out. So I don't know if, I mean, it's a question of how much, it's about market value and like how good or bad those players are compared to replacement. So yeah, it's an interesting question if you're the Texans franchise.
The team sucks, he sucks, but if they can shore up at least a QB, an interesting prospect, that would be ideal, I think.
Fair enough. Moving on. Titans at Colts. Speaking of the lovely AFC South, what a game. Except not really.
I mean, how is it possible that like every team in the AFC South always sucks all the time? It's like an enigma. Like, that doesn't make sense, but they always suck, all of them, always.
What I've really discovered about the Titans, it's pretty clear that they are a first half team. They did not score a single point in the second half, either this week or last week. They just get off to good starts and then implode. But they face competition that's bad enough that that's okay.
They take care of business against inferior opponents, and they'll get shellacked by anyone of a comparable talent level. It feels like they no-showed against the Bills. They beat the Colts, but not impressively. They just, I think they're fraudulent, even though they're probably going to win the AFC South. I think this year is the year that they're going to make the playoffs, make no headway, and just get shelled by whoever they play in the first round.
Yeah, that's fair. That's why I figured, you know, for Survivor, I'd pick them week one against the Giants, but never doubt those Giants. Am I right, Cade?
Quit playing with my boys. Quit playing with them Giants.
Quit playing with Danny Dimes.
Quit playing with Senor Dimes.
Yeah, but this was a really gross game, Titans at Colts, though. It's the weirdest start for the Colts. I mean, I just thought they'd be better, and it's not gelled at all. This O-line's been the worst than it should be, and now they are 1-2-1, you know? And now that they're facing the Broncos without Jonathan Taylor, they can very easily go 1-3-1. You know, this is not a team destined for playoff success, to say the least.
The O-line has regressed. The defense is mediocre. Matt Ryan has looked washed. There's not really many positive things to say. Jonathan Taylor has not been a game-breaking talent. Michael Pittman's been solid, but he missed a game. They have literally no one else at wide receiver. Like, looking at their list of wide receivers, it's like 2K my player names. Just not a lot of nice things to say about the Colts.
Unfortunate. So, interestingly, though, Matt Ryan has the fourth most passing yards in the NFL so far.
Well, they're always down, it feels like, so there's never time to run the ball. They go down immediately and usually down big, and then they just got to hope they can throw their way back into the game.
Yeah, that's true, but at the same time, it's not even necessarily – it is partly the game script for sure. But I think my bigger takeaway when I saw that list is that only one quarterback has cracked 1,250 passing yards. Like, this has just not been a very consistently successful passing league so far, because Justin Herbert is the only guy who's averaged like 320 yards a game even, you know? Like, most guys are – almost every player in the league is 300 yards or less. And, I mean, 300 yards is – maybe it's a high bar, but considering the way passing offense has developed in this league, I just expected better performances overall.
I think that offense is like a 10-year low, and they're averaging right in the vicinity of like 22 points a game per team, which is like way worse than it's been. Just a down year for offenses in general. I would expect them to uptick over the second half of the season as we see teams start to glue, start to mesh, start to figure out which concepts work for them. But I still think it's going to be a down year overall for offense, which is impacting things from fantasy scores to draft stock to all the above.
Yeah. Be interesting to figure out why exactly that is. I think it I think it probably largely has to do with, you know, the lack of chemistry, with how much offenses have changed over this offseason.
A lot of turnover, a lot of player movement, and it takes time, you know, to get in that rhythm and sort of figure out what everyone's capable of doing as a unit.
Yeah. Speaking of a unit that has not been good on offense so far, the Chicago Bears facing
the Bears.
Bear down.
Chicago, just watching your offense, it should be classified as a federal crime for sickos only.
Yeah. It's definitely a suboptimal situation, to say the least. Interestingly, though, I mean, the ground game was a lot less effective than it was the past week or two. And that was disappointing considering the Giants have had a pretty bad running defense. But if it's even possible, I do think Justin Fields looked better as a passer this week than the week before. And this season for me was always supposed to be about struggling and working through those struggles and becoming a better player by the end of the year, going through those progressions. And this game was a lot more of the O-line failing him than in previous weeks. And Justin Fields, obviously, he had a really huge deep ball to Darnell Mooney, like, early in the game. And overall, I mean, the bar is low, certainly, but he looked better. And I'm just going to take what I can get at this point.
He couldn't look much worse. I'm intrigued to see if he gets another year, because it's a new coaching staff. It's a new front office. Like, they're not tied to him. And if you guys keep playing at the rate you are, you'll be in contention for a pretty good pick and could be in the mix for one of the QB prospects. I will say that I said in the predictions, people are sleeping on them Giants, my boy. I said the Giants are due to rise up. The receivers have actually been worse than I ever could have imagined. Danny Dimes looked pretty solid. He's not looked great, but he's looked pretty solid. And Saquon has been amazing. And the defense has been much improved from last year. And I think that you can tell the difference the coaching has made. So I'm excited to see if they can keep putting it together. And I'm excited to see them in some NFC East matchups.
Yeah, I mean, they're undefeated outside the NFC East, only losing to the greatest QB of all time in Cooper Rush.
It's not their fault that they ran into the Cooper Rush buzzsaw. That's just a scheduling quirk, and it happens. But hopefully Dak will come back, and Dak is beatable while Cooper Rush is not.
It's very true. But, yeah, I think the Giants, I still they're better. I mean, their 3-1 record shows that. But, what's the best team that they've faced? Cooper Rush, obviously, and then the next best team would probably be the Titans, or a pretty doo-doo team, as we established just now. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I think they're not going to get stiff competition. The NFC East, generally, all these teams have pretty favorable schedules moving forward. But if they face a bunch of, like, more contending AFC teams, I think they'd be struggling a lot more. Either way, good for them. I'm always looking forward to teams getting better, even if they're not my own team. Pretty much any team can get better outside of the NFC North, and I'm happy for them. And I'm even happy for the Lions this year, but I'm going to become very sick and tired of them very shortly.
Okay. Did Danny Campbell take a bite out of your kneecap? Is that why you got grumpy there at the end?
Well, no, he didn't take a bite out of my kneecap. Physically, maybe spiritually, because it's just easy to recognize, wow, the Bears are the worst of the worst in this division, and it's not a good-looking division right now.
No, it's not. The Packers, I believe, are the kings of Shit Mountain. That is the NFC North. Are we moving on to the Jags and the Eagles?
Yes, anything to get towards a good game, please.
Trevor Lawrence had 4 fumbles. It was pouring rain. The Eagles might actually not be fraudulent. They are firing on all cylinders. They went down, I believe, 14 zip, like basically immediately, and clawed back and were in control basically the whole rest of the game after that. The Jags are frisky. Trevor Lawrence much improved. I think the rain was sort of fluky, and hopefully he'll learn from the experience. I set the all-time record for lost fumbles in a game. So we literally saw a once-in-a-lifetime event.
That was something. I mean, I was watching that game, and I just couldn't believe it. Like, he was fumbling every way possible. Like, I think at some point I felt like the refs were, like, fabricating situations. Because it's just unbelievable to fumble four times, even if you're getting pressured a lot. Like, I'm pretty sure he took less sacks. Like, he didn't take that many sacks, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to, like, the Commanders, who, when they faced the Eagles last week, took 9 sacks. And Carson Wentz fumbled far less than 4 times. I think he fumbled once.
I think the weather obviously played a factor, but also the center must have been on the sideline, like, eating a bucket of popcorn or something, getting grease all over the ball, because that thing was just slipping out all over. But I think if I'm an Eagles fan, I'm feeling pretty darn good about where they're at in comparison to the rest of the NFC East and even the rest of the NFC in general. They're the only 4-0 team. Jalen Hurts has looked like the future and has proven a lot of the doubters wrong. The wide receiver room has been solid. AJ Brown's been excellent. The running back room, none of them are individually all that stunning, but they're a three-headed monster that's pretty effective. And
Miles Sanders in particular, I mean, obviously he's the 1A. He looked really good this past game.
He had a great day. I think it was probably the best day of his pro career. And on the other end, if I'm a Jags fan, obviously you're not happy you lost and you're not happy Trevor Lawrence fumbled 4 times. But this is the best the Jags have been since the miraculous Blake Bortles year. So, I mean, I would be taking it.
I mean, they're still tied for first in their division. Like, they it can definitely be a good season for them moving forward. Yeah. Now for two teams that have less optimistic futures, Jets and Steelers.
I am going to push back a little bit. Zach Wilson probably played the best quarter of his pro career in the fourth quarter to spur the comeback and secure the win. He slid into Giselle Bundchen's DMs, an all-time legendary move that's going to ultimately backfire and result in a Tom Brady Super Bowl. But still a legendary move, MILF Hunter, Zach Hunter. And he hit one of the smoothest gritties I've seen by a white player after he scored. So,
I mean, I guess the smoothness of the gritty does matter. Something about these AFC East white boys, because Mac Jones hit a pretty good gritty too. Remember that?
Did he? I thought, wasn't his like the like sort of like the swaying one or no?
You know, maybe my whiteness is showing here, but I thought it was a good gritty.
Oh, Mike Gesicki had the all-time worst and is currently has a gritty so bad it could never be replicated, even as like a meme. Zach Wilson was hitting that bit high key, so good for him. He showed off the swag you need in a franchise QB. They secured the win. Breece Hall, the rookie, he punched in the winning touchdown. I think the Jets are not a contender, but I think the Jets are much improved from last year.
I mean, yeah, sure, but they were in the basement last year.
Well, I think the big money question is going to be, can Zach Wilson put like build on that fourth quarter and play like that, or even like sort of like that, even three quarters of the time? Because his current base level play, not inspiring. But if he has those higher gears, he's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly hope the second overall pick has some higher gears. But it was a good game for them. And the Steelers, it's really tough to say that they ever have a good game. But Kenny Pickett brought in a spark to that offense. And now he's the QB1 for Week 5. And this, I mean, it's going to be more exciting. I don't know if I'm ready to say it's exciting yet, but anything's better than Trubisky.
Anything's better than Trubisky. They really had to make this switch. The impact was immediate. I think it's good for chemistry. I think it's good to make sure Mike Tomlin doesn't lose the locker room. And now you can figure out what you have in Kenny Pickett by the time the draft rolls around. Because if you're terrible and he's terrible, you can look into getting a replacement. If he's serviceable to frisky to pretty good, then you know that you can invest elsewhere and make sure that you're investing in the future.
I mean, I'm not a fan of moving on from a QB after 1 year, even if he looked like really bad. Because I think that's more situational than the player himself, given what like Pittsburgh has to offer.
I agree with you in concept, but if you are bad enough to get a high pick and you really think this guy's not the guy, you sort of got a Josh Rosen. They replaced Josh Rosen with Kyler. They had the number one overall pick, and it has worked out for the better. If you play a full season of Kenny Pickett, you hate what you see, and you've got the number two pick and you really like C.J. Stroud, why not?
Yeah, I mean, makes sense. It's a quarterback's league. It's just tough. You know, it takes time to learn. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of QBs, you know, obviously as the supporter of Justin Fields, I have to hope for, like, the future. But, yeah, that's what this league has come to. Speaking of Kyler Murray, Cardinals at Panthers. Your boys, they put up a fight for, like, the first quarter.
Our defense is actually really good, but it doesn't matter. Because our offense is so garbage. That's exquisite garbage, by the way, for those of you listening.
Thank you. I actually couldn't tell. I don't speak French.
It's like infuriating to watch. Like, the defense plays pretty well. Guys get open. Baker throws a piss missile into the ground. Matt Rhule dials up, like, a halfback power on, like, 3rd and 9. And then he's like, oh, the fans want to see excitement, blah, 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 blah. We just want to win. We just are sick of being, like, bad, especially because we have the good pieces. They're just used incorrectly, and we don't have the guy to lead the team. Baker's not the guy. Yeah. Darnold's not the guy. Frickin' Matt Corral is hurt. I mean, it's just a tough season. Beating the Saints was nice, but hopefully we're bad enough that we can clean house and start anew next year.
Mm. You don't think Matt Corral should be given a chance?
Matt Corral would have been given a chance this season, but he got hurt. But, I mean, if we've got a top three pick, we can have a QB competition. I don't mind that.
Right.
But he was ultimately a third-round pick in a weak QB class, so I'm not exactly holding my breath.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. It's been interesting that you guys, like you said, you have pieces. I mean, you have literally Christian McCaffrey, and DJ Moore is a very good wide receiver. His draft stock, his fantasy stock has plummeted atrociously with Baker as QB. But that's, yeah. I mean, if you can find a formula to success, the Cardinals were a tough matchup. They're, even if they've been a really inconsistent team so far, they're still a dynamic offense when they have a high ceiling.
They have a high ceiling. They've got a great offense to match up with our defense. And every defense that plays us, we're going to make them look like the 85 Bears. So, I mean, that's a good combo to secure a win, in my view.
Yeah. It's a pretty good formula, indeed. Moving on, Patriots at Packers. Bailey Zappe almost ousted Aaron Rodgers in his debut at Lambeau.
I think that this was... The Patriots played well, do not get me wrong. I think this is more about the Packers making some costly errors and miscues than it was about, the Patriots really laying it to them. The Packers overcame it. Romeo Doubs, who's actually looked pretty good. Dobbs. I'm not sure how you say it. He dropped a gimme touchdown, and then he had another bad fumble in the red zone. But that's just the growing pains when you've got young receivers. At least he's looked good, and they put it together to win an OT.
Yeah. I mean, it's just weird. I definitely agree that it's the Packers not being there more than it was the Patriots being there. Like, mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers has only thrown, including that pick six he threw, he's only thrown two pick sixes in his career at Lambeau. The result, that's miraculous. I hate this man so much, but I can't deny his greatness as a football player. That's like the most infuriating part. because like it's just his shitty personality that really rubs me the wrong way the most. Like if he was like humble like Brady or like a class act like Peyton, you know, I'd feel better about it. But I hate that man. Like I feel vile like looking at him on my screen.
Every time Aaron Rodgers is brought up in front of my brother, do you know what the first thing he says is?
What?
Oh, you mean the guy that hates his family? He says that every time without fail, and then he goes on a tirade against Aaron Rodgers. It's comedic gold the first, like, four times, but then when you've heard the tirade, like, 36 times, it starts to get old. But I see where you're coming from, and you're not the only one who feels that way. And he's not even a Bears fan. He just hates Aaron Rodgers just because.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe my number one gripe against his personality is that he doesn't know how to chug a beer. Honestly, that might be the worst thing about Aaron Rodgers. That's a pretty offensive crime.
He's been living in Wisconsin for like 18 years and can't chug a beer. What is this guy doing? He lost Mila Kunis. He lost Danica Patrick. Like, just an all-time fumbler.
Is he still with Shailene Woodley? I don't even know.
As far as I know, but I don't keep up anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really care. It's just, yeah, well, he's gonna never win a Super Bowl, but he's gonna be the all-time king of regular season football for as long as I am watching him play.
So it sounds like the solution is you've just gotta move into the hills, stop watching football, live a hermit lifestyle, and wait it out. And he'll have a couple bad years, retire, and he can return to society.
And I come back, and Justin Fields is the best QB of all time? Do I get to have that too?
I wouldn't go that far. I don't think the problem with Justin Fields is that you're watching every week.
It's probably true. But yeah, good job to Bailey Zappi. Always tough. He showed some stuff. But yeah, Patriots don't look really great moving forward. Broncos and Raiders. Very fun AFC West matchup.
Battle between two disappointing teams thus far.
Yes, but if you take away their records, I would say this was a fun game to watch.
Fun game. Josh Jacobs really said he's that guy. He said, look up him in the dictionary, and it's a picture of me. I mean, I'm happy for the Raiders. I'm always have a soft spot for them. And I'm just counting down the days till Nathaniel Hackett is fired and we see if it's a Russell Wilson problem or just a general Denver problem.
Yeah, I mean, they just lost Javonte for the season, so that's going to be really tough.
That's really tough. I really feel bad for him.
And now we
probably won't be back to like week 8 next year, I read, which is just abysmal. Ooh. But it's, yeah, Melvin Gordon season.
Yeah, fumbler in chief right there.
Fumbler in chief. That is facts. He cannot hold on to a football to save his life.
Like, Clearly, some fumbles are less important than others. Like, the goal line fumble was bad, but, like, at least it wasn't, like, it was a fourth down anyways.
Right.
But he was falling to the ground, and it's like he intentionally chose to give it to Amik Robertson. Like, please, make a highlight, because we know I can't make a highlight.
He went to the same school of ball control as Trevor Lawrence, and it's really showing.
Yeah, it's quite unfortunate. Interestingly, I'm pretty sure the school that he actually went to is the same school that Jonathan Taylor has went to, and I think he's pretty good at ball control.
I believe Melvin Gordon was the one who broke the curse on Wisconsin running backs. They kept coming up and being terrible. Melvin Gordon came up, and I think his rookie year he was good but never scored touchdowns, or maybe it's the reverse where he was bad but he scored like 30 touchdowns. I forget.
I call it.
Yeah, definitely 30 touchdowns. But, you know, he's had a good career. He's bounced around. It sucks that he's got a case of the dropsies all of a sudden. But they don't really have other options besides Mike Boone in Denver, so he'll keep getting opportunities. And he opened the way for Jonathan Taylor, so good for him. And he washed off the stench of Monty Ball, all-time bust.
Yeah. I mean, anything to wash off that stench. But I don't know. I think Russ looked fine. This was probably his best game as a Broncos QB so far. Mm-hmm. So, which is weird considering they lost. But yeah, I just think the Raiders really needed a win. Like you said, Josh Jacobs decided to say that he is that guy. It's really unfortunate. I probably still wouldn't have done it. I was actually right about to trade for Josh Jacobs in fantasy. But the thing is, I had a loss of week 6 buys, and I also already had Devontae Adams. So I didn't want to have a team that was like super Raiders heavy in case their team has bad days when, you know, they've had plenty of bad days so far. So I traded for A.J. Dillon instead. He's still a good running back, but he definitely did not have the astronomical performance that Josh Jacobs just had.
Yeah. Are we on to prime time?
I guess we are. Chiefs and Buccaneers. Not your team, but, you know, your team of the area.
I think sort of similar to Packers, Patriots. Two very costly mistakes by the Bucs. Basically ended the game before it started. I think the Bucs kept pace minus the 14 points they coughed up basically immediately to the Chiefs.
So I'm familiar with the Rashad White muffed punt or fumble, whatever it was exactly. But what was the other one? What was the other 7 points?
On the first kickoff of the game, fumbled.
Yeah, that's the Rashad White.
The second one was a fumble deep in the red zone. Then the Chiefs came down and scored.
Mm-hmm. Who was it?
I don't remember. You want me to look it up?
It's not a big deal. But yeah, the Bucs scored 31 points despite all that. So
yeah,
now this is the first week that they had both Mike Evans and Chris Godwin. Mm-hmm. So they were able to Tom Brady had a resurgence, if you will, because he had a pretty bad season so far. And who knows, with this divorce news, he's either going to have his worst season ever or his best season ever.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's Tom Brady took a sack at the 26 and fumbled it, and it was recovered by the Chiefs. And then they immediately scored right after.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Sounds about right.
And that was the result was that Mahomes touchdown that was absolutely absurd to watch.
Mahomes is a magician. We know this.
But my takeaway is the Bucs trending up now that they've got their offense sort of back in order. The Bucs defense did not look good. The Chiefs looked amazing. Chiefs defense made big plays when it had to. I would say the Chiefs should be probably Super Bowl favorites, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, they looked really good. And I definitely was low on the Chiefs, like, relatively, coming into this year. Mm-hmm. It doesn't help that the Chargers have choked constantly. But, yeah, I thought Chargers would win the division. And I thought the Chiefs would probably still be good. I didn't seriously think they were going to miss the playoffs. But I thought that Tyreek was just so much of the success for why – the way it worked, because like Travis Kelce would like never be covered basically when mm-hmm. Tyreek was there, but he's still balling out, and CEH decided to finally be good. So yeah, and Patrick Mahomes is the GOAT, or at least the young GOAT. You know,
I actually took like an opposite set of information to reach the same conclusion you did. You were focused on Tyreek. My focus was just the AFC East the AFC West was so much improved that I thought that playing 6 games against those teams, even the Raiders, who their record is bad, but I think they're still a solid team and are going to be a tough out in a divisional matchup. I just thought that 6 games against those teams would be enough to beat them up, sort of take them out. Like, they'd make the playoffs, but be a bit too beat up to do anything, wouldn't get a bye, might be away in the first round. But so far, that has not been the case.
Yeah. They are just killing it.
Just chugging along.
How much else to say there? Rams had Niners.
My favorite part about the NFC West is that, for whatever reason, it's this bizarre game of rock, paper, scissors where The Niners cannot beat the Cardinals. The Cardinals cannot beat the Rams. And the Rams cannot beat the Niners, although the Rams did win the NFC championship game. But yeah, in all other cases, it's been this bizarre game of rock, paper, scissors that always plays out exactly the same, and it makes whatever team's on the losing end of the rock, paper, scissors looks absolutely terrible whenever the matchup occurs.
Yeah, and the Rams certainly looked quite terrible this game. Rob was telling me about how some analysts said that there's two sides to Matt Stafford. There's the penthouse and there's the outhouse. And boy, has he been having lots of outhouse performances lately.
He has looked pretty abysmal this year. I don't know if it's the shoulder. I don't know if it's the elbow. I don't know if it's the O-line. I don't know what the exact...
I would blame the line first.
I would blame the line first as well, I think. But he's just been awful. And you need, like, he's the engine of the offense. You need him to be solid since their run game is, like, fine, uninspiring.
No, it is not. It is not even fine.
Not even fine? We're not even going to give him that?
No.
Okay. It's
pretty bad.
Who is your least favorite Rams running back?
I mean, given the hype around him, I'd say Cam Akers is probably my least favorite.
Okay. My least favorite is Kyren Williams because I mean, he's a Rams running back. I picked him up for my Dynasty Fantasy Football League, and then he had like a one-hour hype train when Adam Schefter's like, he's going to be the guy. Then he got hurt on like the second play of the game and has been on the IR. So that's my least favorite.
I was thinking of the two starters. My real least favorite is probably Malcolm Brown.
Malcolm Brown? Talk to him. Tell us why you hate Malcolm Brown.
Career vulture, just constantly taking touchdowns away from players who deserve it more. You know, that's really it. I've always liked Daryl Henderson.
I've always liked Daryl Henderson.
And I'm surprised that they're continuing to force the Cam Akers issue. No, let Henderson play. He has been much more effective.
They just if Matt Stafford cannot get right, I don't know if. They might squeak into the playoffs just because the NFC is so terrible, but I can't see them making any noise if Matt Stafford keeps playing like this.
Yeah. And next week they're facing the GOAT, Cooper Rush. So it's not a good
game. That's another loss on the scorecard.
Yep. But yeah, the Niners cleaned up as the rock, paper, scissors said they would.
Mm-hmm.
I know. They looked pretty bad against the Broncos. I was thinking that maybe the rock, paper, scissors would be wrong again, but I was wrong about it being wrong. And, you know, Debo Samuel, who I definitely have some shares of in fantasy, had a marvelous touchdown, you know?
Marvelous touchdown, magnificent fantasy day.
Indeed. Yeah, I mean, I was like, he's the last guy on my team. It's like, I think I need 8 points from him. This is standard, so 8 points from a wide receiver. Honestly, you can't be certain you're getting that without the touchdown. But he got it without the touchdown, so good for him. Good day. And Debo Samuel is just a man that I will always owe deeply because I made about $2,500 because of him.
That's a good reason to owe him.
Yeah.
I will always...
Anytime touchdown score, 49ers against the Cowboys. What a play that was. What a play that was.
I'll always like Debo Samuel because he's got that dog in him.
That's why you're certified a big Zach dog. Wilson fan, too. Why you're a big Zach Wilson fan, too.
Zach Wilson, dog. Debo Samuel, dog. Who else is a dog? Saquon Barkley, dog. Those are the three that come to mind immediately. Mike Evans, dog.
Plenty of dogs. Plenty of dogs. It's a good league. It's a dogs league.
It's a dogs league. It's a dog-eat-dogs league.
Yeah. If only the Bears could find a single dog on offense. Maybe the running backs. Maybe the running backs. But yeah, that's really all I have to say for this week's recaps. Any final thoughts, Cade?
Final thoughts, fire Matt Rhule, Panthers are terrible, fire Zach Taylor into the sun, dog eat dog league.
Truly excellent. This has been Hitrad, everyone. Peace out.